up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Chasm is the game for this week's episode. Chasm is a 2D action platform Metroidvania, and a lot of similarities to games that we've covered on the podcast before, like Time Spinner, Infernax, Eldorand, and Animal Well. The game originally released in July of 2018 on PC, Mac, Linux, PS4, and PlayStation Vita, and this is cross-buy between PS4 and Vita, so you can still buy that on PS4 and get that free Vita version. In October of 2018, it came to the Switch, and in November of 2018, it came to Xbox One. The game was developed by BitKid Inc., which is a small team out of Maryland here in the US, and I think they've worked on some other small games, but right now they're currently working on, I think, another Metroidvania called Wolfhound that is almost ready. It's still in development, but I think they've announced it maybe last year. And this sounds interesting. This is a Metroidvania that is built around World War II. The game was self-published, except for the Switch version, which was published by Leadman Games. Not sure how to pronounce that. Pretty good that small studio like this, self-publishing. Tough getting the word out, but definitely congrats to them for self-publishing. The game had physical releases. In October of 2020, Limited Run did a release of the PS4 and the Switch version, and there were two SKUs, so a standard edition that was just the game in the box and possibly an instruction booklet, and then they also did the Classic Edition, which is kind of like a bigger collector's edition. It had CD soundtrack for the game, stickers, a poster, all kinds of art books and stuff like that, so a lot of goodies there. And the game also had a vinyl soundtrack release in October of 2020, same time, through Limited Run Games, and that was a 2LP, and so I believe they launched at the same time. Original MSRP of the game, it originally released at $19.99, and then those Limited Run SKUs, the Standard Edition $34.99, and the Classic Edition or Collector's Edition at $69.99, and that vinyl was released at $34.99. Runtime of the game, if you're running straight through, really not taking your time, not going back and backtracking and getting a lot of the optional goodies, could take you somewhere between 8 and 9 hours to plow through the game. But if you're being super thorough, it might take you closer to 10 or 15, somewhere in that range, possibly more. The game does have a platinum trophy for our PlayStation listeners, and it's sitting at 13%, which seems pretty manageable. I think there might be one trophy that seems a little tough. I'm not sure if I'm going to get that platinum trophy, but it certainly seems accessible. And me, I've been playing this on my Vita, so I bought it on PS4, got it on sale for $12.99, definitely got the cross-buy going, playing it on the Vita, and I've probably put in close to 6 hours. I think it gives a percentage on the map of sort of how much you've discovered, and I think I'm at over 50%, but I think that's a percentage of how much of the map you've seen. And in terms of recommendation, I bought this game a while back, potentially before the Limited Run physical release. The game looked pretty simple. The cross-buy, definitely I'm all about trying to still play games on the Vita. So cross-buy between PS4 and Vita was a big thing there. And then the game has definitely been mentioned on some podcasts, at least in passing. Certainly on Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, they've mentioned this. And I think they've mentioned it more recently because they've been talking about their new game, Wolfhound, that's due to come out. And so they've kind of reminisce on Chasm. So I finally decided to give it a shot. All right, let's talk gameplay for Chasm. So this is a 2D action game, so let's run through some of the basics. You're going to be moving left to right. I've been playing it on the Vita, and I've actually been using the D-pad. I find that to be a lot simpler and easier to manage, so I'm not sure how that would pan out on the DualShock or whatever, but definitely the D-pad is viable. And your character moves at one speed, fairly fast, and you're jumping, so there's a jump button, and this is very sensitive in terms of how long you hold it and how high you go or how far you go. So I've had shorter jumps, and then I've had longer jumps that eventually I realized I could reach by sort of holding the jump button more. You start out very simple with the jump and what you can do. You do have to like land on top of a platform, but there will be advanced options that come later as sort of upgrades to your character. There is a dodge button, and if you press it, your character will move backwards, just like shuffling backwards. That is the only way you can dodge, so you can't dodge forward, you can't dodge through enemies. This is something that you'll really only use when you're working out the timing of the enemy attacks and when to dodge. And for the most part, when you just dodge right next to them back, you should dodge far enough to miss their attacks. And your character can do a basic weapon attack with a melee weapon of your choosing, because there'll be a bunch. And then there's a secondary attack button, and this is going to be reserved for sort of like spell attacks that you can equip. And other than that, you will be coming across things that you can interact with or doors that you can go in. And this will be pretty much just pushing up on the D-pad. And this is a platformer, so just some of the basics, run-of-the-mill stuff that you would expect. So like I said, the jump sensitivity is going to be a big thing. Reaching far platforms, which you can do. There'll be timed platforms. There'll be ones that if you step on, they crumble. There'll be ones that move at a steady pace that you have to kind of wait till they come back or time it perfectly with how far you're jumping. You can jump up through platforms. Some I think you can jump down through, but not very often. And there'll be ladders, certainly, that you'll see, and you kind of know what to do if you've ever played a Mega Man game or any of these 2D Metroidvanias. And there's going to be a lot of synergy when it comes to the enemies and their movements, getting across platforms and whatnot and trying not to get hit. Because if you do get hit, you'll kind of get stunned, like in Mega Man, in the air, and then you won't be able to jump or move or whatever. So you'll just kind of fall. So speaking of enemies, let's talk enemies and hazards. So as you're traversing through the game, you're going to come across enemies that are placed. And this is going to be right out of Mega Man or pretty much your standard Metroidvania in terms of where they're placed. And again, that synergy with the platforming, the placement is very intentional. What I like about the enemies is their movement and the patterns that they take and the speed that they move really vary. This remains consistent throughout the different levels or the different biomes that you get to that are clearly supposed to be more challenging. Just the general variation, and it's not even like all biomes have a slow moving thing on the ground or all biomes have a flyer or whatever. It's really some good variation and often some combination moves that a lot of enemies will do. And so the types of enemies that you'll see, like I said, you'll see flyers, ones that shoot projectiles, ones that are sort of tanky and slow moving but hit hard, ones that will rush you all the way to the edge of a platform, ones that will spawn enemies, all the types of things that you might normally see you'll see here, but again, really some good synergy and some good variation within a lot of these different rooms. And speaking of the rooms, you will have a lot of tight spaces where there's not a lot of room to jump high, and so it'll kind of leave you having to face a lot of enemies in these short corridors. So it's not often that you're able to run through some rooms, and so you have to kind of get used to going back and forth and killing these enemies or getting used to their timing, especially because whenever you leave a screen, it will automatically reset the enemies on that previous screen. So you can't just go to another room and then go back and expect to be able to backtrack. All those enemies will immediately reset when you come back in the room. And hazards that you'll come across, so there'll be sort of pits, and sometimes they might have water, which doesn't really matter to you. You can float in water and jump out of it, but a lot of times those water pools are going to be poison water, and as long as you're in them, you'll be taking sort of consistent damage. Same thing if there are like spike pits. None of these things are going to be instant death. You're not going to have anything that's going to be instant death. It's just things that are going to damage you consistently, and you have to jump out of them or get out of them. But jumping out of water can sometimes be a pain, like you don't jump as high. So you have to like jump, and then as soon as you come back on the water, you have to like jump again. So it might feel like you're kind of spazzing out, but you do have to like consistently press the jump button to make sure you get out of the water. And so you have your character, and your character will have some stats. So they'll have hit points and magic points. So obviously your hit points are your health. Magic points are going to be what you need to do your spell attacks, depending on which attack you have equipped and how much MP it costs. You'll have a couple different attack and defensive stats. It's weird how these are split up. It's pretty convoluted how they work. It's actually not even really overtly explained, but I think you have like two different defensive stats, one that reduces physical damage, and I think one that reduces like magic or elemental or otherwise. And so they're listed as like constitution or intelligence for your like magic attack, and then strength for your physical attack. So it's not really well explained, but I believe that's what they are. You'll be able to equip armor pieces, I think like a helmet and armor, and then two accessory slots. And so you'll find a bunch of things that you can constantly put in and see if they'll upgrade your stats. So you're constantly finding something new and then comparing it to what you already have equipped. You'll have a slot for a melee weapon, like we said, and a slot for a secondary attack, which is a spell. And with these weapons, whether it's the spell, whether it's the melee weapon, you're going to find a lot of different things, and they're going to vary in terms of their range, in terms of their timing. So you might get some quick melee weapons that have a short range, but you can get a lot of attacks out pretty quick. And then you might have a bigger weapon that has a long range, but is pretty slow, but also does more damage. So it's really up to you to kind of, you know, min-max and figure out what strategy you want to go with or what's more comfortable for you. And with armor pieces, with weapons, you can sometimes discover them out in while you're exploring, but also you can buy them at sort of the hub where there will be some shopkeepers. And as you're out going up against enemies, killing them, every time you kill an enemy, you're going to get experience. And if you get enough experience, you're going to level up. And this is sort of a passive automatic level up. It's just going to boost pretty much all of your stats by a certain amount, including your max hit points, your max MP. What's really nice is whenever you level up, you automatically get full health. This is something that is very appreciated as a gamer. And in terms of accessibility, like if you're out on a tangent on the map and you're running low on hit points, but you're still killing enemies, it sort of like propels you to keep exploring or to try to get as far as you can, and hopefully you can level up and then you'll reset sort of your health and be able to take on a lot more or be able to get back to the last save point. Also, as you're killing enemies, you will get gold currency that you'll be able to spend at shops. So let's talk about progression and how the game sort of paces out. So you will start in this hub town that'll have some NPCs, it'll have a save point, but then when you're leaving the town, you're going to go into the dungeon, like into the chasm. And this is similar to a lot of games like Dark Cloud, where you have like a hub world and then you're going into the dungeon. And when you go in the dungeon, it's basically going to be your typical Metroidvania map. You're going to be progressing in different rooms. And on the map, it's going to look like boxes, and some of them are big rooms, some of them are small corridors. But you're going to be exploring. A lot of the mantra here in this game is going to be go until you can't, which is something that it rings true for a lot of Metroidvania games, especially ones that have traversal upgrades. So you're going to run into a wall where it's like, oh, I see that, but I can't get that with anything that I have now, or I can't jump over that, or I can't wall grab there, or something like that. So it's going to be a lot of just kind of bouncing off. And again, you're going to be killing enemies as you pass through rooms, gaining XP. You'll also be able to break boxes. You'll be able to find chests where you can find currency. You'll be able to find crafting materials, which we'll talk about in a little bit. As you're going through the rooms, there'll be some minor puzzling. Obviously, you'll have platforming challenges, enemies to dispose of, but you might also have switches or levers that open doors up. There are a couple small puzzles. I can think of one in particular where it's like environmental, like you have to put in numbers, but you have to go find like what the numbers reference. There might be some slight puzzling. I did, in fact, look up one of the big puzzles because the game doesn't really give a lot of context. It just kind of gives like, hey, you need to put three numbers here. And if you skip some of the dialogue with some of the NPCs that you came across, you might have completely missed that you had to do something with that. And a lot of what you're doing is you're progressing through this dungeon and you're eventually going to find NPCs that you have to rescue. And once you rescue them, you have to like hit a lever and it'll release them out of the cage. They will go back to the hub world and provide some kind of context, probably be some kind of a shopkeeper. And then once they're there for a while, they'll have like mini side quests, at least some of them will, where it's like you need to fetch something for them or find some treasure that's in some chest somewhere. And then that'll advance sort of what they're able to provide for you, whether it's like a new list of things to buy or an option to craft certain things. And then also while you're down in the dungeon, you'll definitely come across some boss battles. In the boss battle, there might be some platforms or some challenges that you have to do to avoid things. What I like about these boss battles, they all seem to be very unique in terms of their moveset, in terms of, you know, simple things like their appendages and how that fits into the platforming or their moveset. So I really did like a lot of these. A little tough at times, but we'll talk about difficulty in a little bit. And then finally, what you will come across, which will be the main progressor for you, is you'll find artifacts, and they'll probably be in a chest. And these are going to grant you different move abilities for your traversal. So things like being able to grab ledges of platforms, being able to jump walls, being able to slide. All pretty standard things, but they come piecemeal. So when you acquire one of these new moves, you'll think, I remember a couple places where I could use that where I wasn't able to progress before. And so again, the Metroidvania backtracking coming in there, you'll be able to go back to places that you were stumped at and then progress further. And so overall, the pacing is going to regard your exploration. Once you're finding that artifact or finding that traversal, you can go back and look at the map and see, oh, where was I not able to progress? And the map is very transparent, like typical Metroidvania maps are, where they'll have a room that's a square, and if there's a way into another room below it or to the side of it, it'll show that gap on the edge of the room. The map is nice, it's helpful, it's not super detailed, but again, it shows paths that you haven't been to. It'll have coloration for rooms that are like save points or fast travel rooms. There'll even be markers on there for things that you haven't interacted with yet that you can. And this is really nice because you can actually put some of these manual markers on the map if there's somewhere that you've been that you know you're going to have to come back to. And the marker is just a dot, so it's not like you can mark it with something specific, but I think it is at least nice that you're able to mark it in some way to help you remember, I need to come back here. And again, the pacing is really going to be just bouncing off of paths that you've gone on where you can't go any further because you need a traversal item or whatever. And then so it's going to bring you kind of back to square one. And then so you're going to be consulting the map. And the game actually takes a little while to unfold in terms of waiting for an upgrade to be able to traverse. I would say the first traversal upgrade, it takes a while. I say maybe an hour or two at least until I got that, or at least until I knew that I had to do that. So I had a lot of that first few hours just open exploring, and it's like I can just keep going until I can't. And you will unlock fast travel pretty early, which is nice. The way the fast travel works is you're going to have sort of fast travel points that link back to a hub that's in a specific biome. So the game is split up into maybe like five or so biomes. And so when you find that fast travel point in that biome, it's going to bring you to like a fast travel room, and then you'll be able to unlock the different places as you explore in that biome, and then you'll always be able to go from any of those places back to the fast travel room for that biome, and then eventually you'll unlock a door in the fast travel rooms that you'll be able to swap between the different biomes. So it sounds complicated, but it's pretty straightforward, honestly, and very accessible. In general, I feel like the scope of this game and the exploration and how it's paced is very digestible. I think the maps are not too big. The game itself is not too big. I think that can be something that deters a lot of people with Metroidvanias, especially in regards to the backtracking aspect, because often, at least for me, I forget where there were places I could go because it had been so long ago. But I found that in this game, I mean, I've only been playing for like 6 hours. It's not a long game, maybe 8 or 9 hours. I've already kind of ticked off a lot of those places that I saw originally because not that much time had really passed. And so I was able to remember, and plus the map is not that big, and the game sort of marks things on the map itself. It all just comes across as very digestible, not too egregious in terms of the backtracking. And even when you find a new ability, there's only maybe like 3 or 4 places that you can actually backtrack and find some kind of goodies. What's interesting about this game is the map is uniquely generated, and it's not that the game is procedurally generated because the actual rooms were crafted, so they are not like procedurally generated rooms, but the makeup of the map and where the different rooms are is procedurally generated. And so this is really interesting about this game because everyone playing this game is going to have a unique map. Each of the rooms was crafted individually, but how you progress through this game and where things are, whether it's save points, whether it's the bosses or how to get to another biome or the fast travel rooms, it's all going to be unique to your playthrough. I think this is a pretty novel idea. I am hesitant to describe the pacing, though, when I think about this, because I'm hopeful that anyone playing it will have the same experience in terms of maybe how far the save points are from each other. But I hope that it's not too different. I hope that the experience for everyone is sort of the same. And in terms of accessibility, like I said, at least for my playthrough and my map layout, the save points are in fair frequency. I wouldn't say that they're that frequent, but I like that it's really kind of pushing you to go pretty far and find the next save point. Anytime you're at a save point, you're going to get full health back and it's going to save. But it is interesting in terms of the dying mechanic, because if you die, you will go back to the last time you saved, similar to Infernax when we talked about the progression in there. So you're going to find that, like, if you're gearing up for a certain boss battle, you're going to want to maybe level up or maybe try to traverse to the closest save point. And if you're traveling from far away, you're going to want to still stop at that closest save point, because if you die, it's going to bring you back to the last save point. You'll also get consumables in the world. These will definitely be helpful if you're running low in a boss battle on hit points. And you can just go to the pause menu and go to your inventory, and you can just rapid fire eat those to regain health, and it won't like take time out in the world. And they'll also be like maybe scrolls or things like that that you can cast spells. This isn't something that I came across too much, but there are a couple spells that like will either transport you back to the town or like will summon somebody to aid you in battle. So little things like that will pop up as sort of like a help for you. And the game does have difficulty levels. I believe there's easy, normal, and hard. And when you pick a difficulty level, I think it just adjusts the overall enemy health and how frequent the enemies are. So I think if I would adjust that, there might be less enemies in certain rooms. I've been playing the game on normal, and I think it's a pretty fair challenge. I definitely died a handful of times, but I don't think it's as challenging as Infernax. Somewhere between Infernax and maybe Time Spinner, I feel like, in terms of sort of relative difficulty in my eyes. But I like that the option is there to choose a difficulty level depending on how comfortable you feel with the genre. Let's talk about the vibe of Chasm, and let's start with the visuals. So this is a pretty bare bones, simple pixelation. It seems pretty tiny in terms of the pixels, probably in the 16-bit range or something like that. I feel like this comes through very nicely on the Vita. I don't know what this would look like if you were playing it on your PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5 on like a 55-inch TV, but it seems, at least on the handheld, that the pixels are very tiny and giving us a lot of detail, which is nice. In terms of the colors, it is very biome dependent, at least in the beginning, in the first few biomes that you're in. A lot of gray palette, definitely a lot of gray in the mines, which is the first biome that you'll come across. Obviously, a lot of rocks. When you're in the different biomes, they will have a different color tint. Like when you're in the forest biome, it's green. When you're in the catacombs, it has sort of like a yellow orange type thing. And you'll see that tint sort of come across everything and really be reflected in the backgrounds and the environments. And speaking of those environments, so again, biome specific, like when you're in the mines, the background is sort of cavernous, but when you're in some of the other areas, there might be walls there, there might be furniture posted almost like a picture on the background, or statues or things like that. But it's definitely defined the platforms or the ground that you're able to walk on and interact with. There'll be things in the environment that you can interact with, like boxes or lamps. You can hit these things. Boxes are going to give you potentially crafting materials or currency. The lamps are interesting because I accidentally hit them a couple times and they will sort of explode fire on you. But there's a way to hit it when it's over an enemy and it'll actually just fall on the enemy and hurt them, which is nice. There's a bunch of things that do stand out. Like, for example, when you come across a switch that needs to be hit up or down, it will have like a sheen or a flash on it, kind of letting you know, like, hey, you need to interact with this. And whenever you come across new environmental features, they really do stand out. So, for example, there'll be blocks that are like sand that you have to jump on, but when you jump on them, they crumble. So it's sort of like a time jump puzzle, almost like in Mega Man, as well as some of the floors will have spikes that pop up when you step on that piece of floor, and this will pop visually. You'll definitely see like a white grate on top of the normal floor, and so it'll really stand out, which is nice. And then you have your character sprites, very typical Super Nintendo vibe, almost like Final Fantasy, and so the minor features will stand out, whether it's like what they're wearing, if they're wearing a hat or a bandana. And what's really good is the weapon that you're choosing or using, the swipe that it does. Like, you can see sort of the air kind of swipe when you hit it, and that'll be pretty transparent in terms of like the range of that weapon and how quick it's going. So very helpful for figuring out which weapon you want to use. In terms of audio, I think the music is fine. It's not something that really stood out. At times it was a bit repetitive and simple, especially in the mines. I think that for the most part, it captures the essence of the biome, but it's kind of just on loop, nothing that's really pulling at your heartstrings. Eventually, I didn't really play with the sound too much. I was playing on my Vita and sometimes in bed, so like I wouldn't keep it too loud. And in terms of setting and themes, again, the game itself in terms of gameplay is very simple scope. And I think this also comes through in the setting and what's going on. You're kind of like this mercenary that got hired to come to this town and help them out. And you find the mayor and you have to like save the townspeople or the people working. They're somewhere trapped in the chasm or whatever. I will say the dialogue in this game is pretty good. It's short and sweet, but it has some nice wit and character. The NPCs definitely have some life and some personality. Like, you've got the baker, the blacksmith, the archaeologist, and I just really like sort of the personality that they have, whether it's like if you're trying to help them out with a quest or them just kind of talking normally in passing. Sometimes there were some things that made me chuckle a little bit. But overall, things going on in the game, there's a little bit of magic, there's a little bit of ancient civilization, there's an archaeologist that you're following around, and he's kind of telling you of what he thinks is going on in the chasm or with the things that he's discovering. And then some of the enemies that you come across and the biomes that you're in, like in the catacombs, you're going to have a lot of skeletons and mummies and ghosts. In the forest, you're going to have some bugs or some woodland nymphs. So I like that all those things kind of tie together with where they are. And sort of the vast array of the different things that you're going to see. Let's wrap up the conversation about Chasm. So this is a very compact and enjoyable Metroidvania. I think the scope is just right for this type of game. I've played a lot of Metroidvanias. Sometimes they're a little long in the tooth. Sometimes I struggle with remembering things if I have to backtrack and not wanting to explore too much. I think this game has just the right scope. All of that to say, I think this is just a nice, neat experience. It's compact. I think it's for the busy person who likes Metroidvanias, and this is a game that could definitely be tackled. The story and the setting, nothing really that crazy. A bit lacking, but not something that I really missed. It's definitely a game that you can treat as pick up and play and not really miss a beat. I definitely put this down for a week at times, and I picked it back up and I just looked at the map and I was like, oh, I'll go here. And then all of a sudden I was just right back in it. Solid pacing in this game. I think the challenge scaling with the progression that you're going through and the different biomes that you're accessing. And I played it on normal. I think it was really good and really fair, but I definitely died a few times. I like in terms of accessibility and being able to play your way. So you can choose your difficulty, you can choose your different weapons that you want to use, whether it's the melee weapon, the spells, and you can kind of customize how you want to attack or how you want to take on enemies. And if you're someone who's looking for that sort of advanced challenge, like if you're a Mega Man or a Castlevania veteran, you can definitely play it on harder, and I think that you would feast well with this game. In terms of value, I think $20 isn't bad for an MSRP. I probably would suggest it be more around $15. If it is on sale for about $15, I think that's a nice price. It gets a little tougher with a game like this because it is a bit older, so I think some people might be more inclined to want to pay less or think that it's not that complex. So if you want to wait for it to be maybe around $10, I think that is a really great deal. But I think $15 is a solid price. And the fact that it's cross-buy on Vita, that was a selling point for me. I know there's a lot of Vita heads out there definitely looking for games to keep playing on their Vitas. I think this lives so well on the Vita. So if you can see it out on PlayStation on sale, definitely jump on it so you can play it on the Vita. I'm sure it's also great on Switch. But overall, I think this is a good, simple game for anyone. And if you're not someone who's played Metroidvanias or even really enjoys too much about Metroidvanias, I think this would be a nice entry point into the series or into the genre that could really get you sort of hooked on them. So I highly recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.